Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Blazer Banter Podcast. I'm Eric Gunderson. On this week's podcast, we had Patrick Redford, who writes for Vice Sports. He wrote a piece for them about Damian Lillard last week, but Patrick also covers the Sacramento Kings and has written for them for ESPN's True Hoop. And we talked about the Kings, Damian Lillard, a little bit of everything. You can follow Patrick at Patrick Redford, R-E-D-F-O-R-D. Hope you enjoy.
Patrick, how are you doing, man?
Doing pretty well. How are you, Eric?
Doing pretty good. I watched a little bit of the Kings game last night. Obviously, some things are different since the last time the Blazers played them. But, yeah, I guess so. What's going on with the Kings, and how's the transition been going under the legendary Ty Corbin?
Mostly frustrating. The thing about the Kings that you need to know is, with the talent on their roster, they're only good under, like, a very specific set of circumstances. Like, if everyone's playing together on the same page in this really ugly style and Cousins is incredibly committed to defense, then they can be pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think that 9-6 stretch we saw at the start of the season is maybe their ceiling. But now, with Malone out, sort of the center that held everything together is gone. So Cousins is drifting, and, you know, one game he'll have a triple-double, the next he kind of will just try to, you know, make between-the-legs passes every time. And the defense has been the worst thing. So watching them has been really, really up and down. Like, you never know what you're going to get.
I saw that Boogie had some comments the other day about kind of saying it was a different team. I mean, Malone, when he was the coach, it always seemed like, and maybe this is just, you know, in my imagination, and you can confirm for me, but it seemed like the Kings have always really played the Blazers well, at least while Malone was there, because Cousins gives them problems, and then Malone always knew, like, good ways to try and get the ball out of Damian Lillard's hands, it felt like.
Yeah, that's sort of – he's good at that. He's good at setting up schemes against – he's good at creating – having the Kings be ready for their matchup, I guess. And – they do match up well, because the Kings' main problem on offense is that they turn the ball over a ton, and Portland doesn't force a ton of turnovers, right?
Right. They're like – last year they were like historically low.
Okay. Yeah, so in that sense they do kind of match up strangely well, and I think Jason Thompson is maybe physically – like he's a pretty tall and springy power forward, so maybe he can stay with Aldridge. I'm not really sure. The last game was that blowout that was both of our second games of the season, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a weird game.
Yeah, Rudy Gay had like 40 points and had like 13 shots. I don't know. Like, it was ridiculous. It was a ridiculously low number of shots for Rudy Gay. He had like tons of free throws.
Yeah, and if Lopez is out, then Cousins should be. I mean, Cousins might be out as well, but by the time this goes up, I guess we'll know. But that's definitely going to be a good matchup for the Kings there. But the problem is you never know what you're going to get. Like, you know, Thompson had this historically great game for him yesterday. I think it might have been his first 20-20 game of his career. But the thing about him has always been he'll give you one of those a month and then disappear for long stretches. And next to Cousins, he looks even worse. So on paper, it's certainly not good for the Kings.
As a Cal guy, does it make you happy that Alan Crabb has found a place in the league?
It does make me happy. I'm glad. I think the Blazers are a good team for his services. Is he getting, you know, 15 minutes off the bench, hitting some threes?
The last couple of games he hasn't, which has been weird. Stotts has gone with this really weird, like, at the start of games, he's like trying to run an 8-man rotation. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's it, I mean, he opened it up a little bit last night because he had to, because they were trying to figure out, like, you know, how to come back because Memphis was kicking their butt. But, yeah. I mean, he's been good when he's been in there. I mean, he's undefeated as a starter
There we go.
In the NBA. So, Alan Crabb.
Put him in there, coach.
What?
I said, put him in there, coach.
Yeah, put him in there. Put him in there. Absolutely. They need more Alan Crabb. Looking at the rest of the Kings roster, I guess I'm looking at the box score from last night. Stauskas with a DNP.
Yeah.
What's happened with, you know, he was a rookie. Vivek obviously loved him, as we saw in the video, the documentary about Grantland, that Grantland made. And Stauskas, he was playing at the beginning of the season, but obviously he's not right now.
He goes through these peaks and valleys of confidence where one time, you know, for a whole game, he'll pass up every open three, and then the coach will call a timeout, and Rudy Gay will come over and hug him, and, like, everyone will start whispering in his ear, like, it's okay, Nick, it's okay. And then the next game, he'll be totally irrationally confident, trying to take dudes off the dribble and getting it stripped. So he's really trying to find his way, and there are some signs that he can be a player, but right now he's incredibly raw, and the Kings don't have a good track record with developing young talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tyreke Evans had his best year ever as a rookie, and then no one could figure out how to use him, and he really regressed after that. So I worry that, especially with Malone out and the franchise being sort of adrift, I worry that we're not using him correctly, because I think he could be – I think he can be a player if given the right situations to thrive in, but I don't think that's happening so far.
Yeah, I always liked his game in college. I thought he was kind of a sneaky, good pick-and-roll player. Obviously, he could shoot, but obviously that hasn't materialized so far this year. Also, what's the deal with Rudy Gay coming off the bench last night? Like, I didn't even know that he did that. And, I mean, not that it really matters if he's playing, you know, 34 minutes. I guess, you know, in the end he's playing more minutes than the other guys. But it's interesting. Why has he come off the bench and – like, what was the reason for that change?
Do you know? Oh, that was a one-time thing. He was a game-time decision, and they thought he wasn't going to play.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, they just kind of threw him in at the end. But the thing about that is that he has to play, because Collison and McLemore, the two guards, don't really create shots for themselves or others particularly well. And when Gay's out, the only person who can do that is Cousins. And when the Kings have no shooters, that's a lot of responsibility for someone who's going to hit double teams every time. So Gay, while he may not be the most efficient, is a kind of essential part to keep the Kings moving.
Yeah, I think the Rudy Gay, and I was part of it, just like, you know, a lot of people were, like, the, you know, Rudy Gay is not efficient. Rudy Gay is
the internet cool guys.
Yeah. Rudy Gay is not a good basketball player. Like, that is where you have to draw the line. Like, he's like, no, he's not an efficient jump shooter. He takes a bunch of long twos, and
he's not Carmelo.
Yeah, exactly. He's not as good at scoring as Carmelo Anthony, but he's a good basketball player.
I think you want him on your team unless he's going to be your primary option.
Right, exactly. Like, he's a perfect, like, if you went up to the Blazers right now and were like, hey, we'll give you Rudy Gay for Nicholas Batum, you don't think they'd do it?
I think they'd do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. They would absolutely do it. Like, right now, with the way Batum's playing, you can't tell me that, like, oh, yeah, well, just because Batum shoots, you know, four or five threes per game, well, he doesn't make any of them right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, Rudy Gay is a fine player. He's really – I think he's important. And you have to have a guy, like you're saying. Like, it doesn't matter, like – I mean, it does matter, but having someone that is able to get a shot –
yeah.
Is very important, maybe just as important as someone who's able to make a lot of shots at an efficient rate. Like,
it's an NBA skill.
Yes.
It's extremely important. And the thing about Rudy Gay is that I think he'd be good maybe as a backup small forward who plays 30, 34 minutes a game. And if the Kings subbed him out for, like, a shooter, then they could spread the floor better with Cousins and then let Gay do his thing off in the second unit and just know he's going to get 20 shots a game. Sort of like how the Warriors put Iguodala on the bench to just balance their units out.
Mm-hmm.
Or but
the Blazers,
the Kings really aren't good enough to consider tinkering with that in any meaningful way.
Mm-hmm. No, well, I mean, before all the injuries happened with the Blazers, like, that was Chris Kaman, like,
yeah,
like, all right. He actually said it took him a while to adjust because, like, he's been in the starting lineup, and he was getting the ball so much, and it's like. He just wasn't used to not having the ball in his hands, like, every possession.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but that's a big reason why the Blazers are so hot out of the gate is because their bench is a lot better than last year because of Kamen and Blake sort of being able to stabilize things better than Mo Williams did.
Basically. Steve Blake, unlike Mo Williams, is like a very good NBA team defender, I guess. Like,
yeah.
He like really understands like the scheme and where to push guys in the pick and roll and how to force them off to, you know, off to the side, and like he stays in front of them, and he like, you know, he almost never makes like, he doesn't gamble a ton. And like, I mean, Mo last year, like, he would play hard, and he had like a lot of, it looked like he had a lot of energy out there when he was on defense. Yeah. But like, he would always let guys get by him, and he would always like jump passing lanes too much, and like just all these different things. And Blake is just like, he's always in the right place on defense. And then he's also been like, you know, really good at like, he's just out there never looking for his own shot. Sometimes it ends up working out poorly for the Blazers because like, Blake isn't used to like finishing layups in the lane and stuff like that, and he'll miss like point blank layups. But like, he usually just keeps his dribble alive for like entire possessions and just gets guys open looks. And then Kamen's just been a beast. Like, it's crazy. Like, the Blazers got so lucky that Spencer Hawes decided to go to the Clippers.
Yeah, Spencer Hawes and his hair that's getting worse by the day.
It seems he's become like so much more like, he's tried to become like so much more hip since moving to Los Angeles.
Yeah, he's really going for trying to capitalize on the national TV exposure with that Christmas suit, his weird little man bun.
Yeah, he's really hashtag branding.
Yeah, I think he looks more like a sort of Civil War era general than anything.
Yeah, or like he looks like Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai.
Okay, yeah, I like that.
I think that was the vibe I was getting. Like, Evan Fournier's man bun is like, it's sleek. It's like very...
He's French. He can pull it off.
Exactly. And it's like very... It's like everything's very tight. And like... And it looks like, you know, there's a little bit of like a, you know, post-turn-of-the-century vibe... Or pre-turn-of-the-century vibe with Hawes's.
Yeah, he's a little, like, he's got that scraggly botulism beard going. I don't really know what's going on with him.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a Sacramento King for a minute, and he wobbled between pretty okay and just hated it there, and he just gave up.
Yeah, I was watching after the Blazer game last night, I was watching the second half of that Kings game last night, and I heard Grant and Jerry. Talking about Spencer Hawes and, you know, his days as a King. One of my favorite Washington Husky former Kings, and it was John Brockman.
Oh yeah, the Brockness monster.
Oh my gosh, he was at
America's favorite 6'5" center.
He was at Summer League.
Yeah, he almost signed for the Bucks, if I recall.
Oh man,
someone he was pretty close to a contract, maybe.
That's. John Brockman, I hope he makes it back in the league.
The Kings have a really long and storied history of getting University of Washington prospects, then sort of not managing them correctly.
They're ruining all of Kevin Pelton's favorite people.
Oh yeah.
Derek Williams, is he? Did they pick up his option?
I can't say right now. I'm not sure.
Okay. I thought he had an option. I knew it was quite large because he was the number two pick in the draft.
Yeah, it's like $8 million or something.
Yeah, that's pretty big. And it also seems kind of crazy that he's only 23 years old. Like, it feels like Derek Williams has been in the league for like a decade.
He's going to be one of those guys in 14 or 15 years who will be like an okay, sort of like Sean Marion, but worse. And we'll just think like, how long has this guy been around? If we're already thinking this now.
Yeah, no, it's really getting there. It's like one of those college guys that's like, he's only been in school for 4 years, but you feel like he's been there forever.
Yeah, like every player on Michigan State, basically.
Yes, exactly. Like, you know, is Corey Lucius still playing for Michigan State?
Yeah, Drew Neitzel.
Oh, man. But also, Bollywood Night last night, was that cool? Yeah. I didn't know anything about Bollywood Night.
So the only – I didn't watch – I watched most of the fourth quarter in a bar where they had a jukebox going, and the only live accompaniment was a guy on the drums just playing the drums along to every song in the jukebox. And so I didn't – I was focusing more on him, but
– That's fair. That's more interesting.
I think they tried to do a color-coordinated shirt, like T-shirt deal section by section. I don't think it worked out from what I saw.
It didn't look like it was, like, color-coordinated on the TV. It seemed like people weren't going to wear those shirts.
Yeah, it seems like a good idea in theory. Like, they were playing some highlights, and you had Slamson wearing I forget what the outfit's called. The dancers were doing some Indian dances.
Mm-hmm. How has my man Summer League MVP Ray McCallum been getting more PT since they fired Malone?
Here and there. One of the thing that Corbin's done right, the thing, is that he's played sessions a lot less, and some of that's the injury, but
yeah.
Well, McCallum is a far better backup point guard than Sessions. Like, Sessions is sort of that former All-Star Mo Williams role, but not quite as good, where every decision he makes is the worst decision and he doesn't know how to play defense. Whereas McCallum is young, enthusiastic, athletic, like he can dunk on dudes, and he passes more. And he's cheaper. So all signs point to him hopefully getting more minutes going forward. But yeah, he's finally getting some PT.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think I read that was one of the reasons why the front office decided to part ways with Malone was he wasn't playing McCallum enough?
Or that's the thing about all these reasons given to fire Malone is that they're all these ticky-tacky little things, and they cite basketball reasons, but none of them add up to a firing, in my opinion. Like, trying to play the veteran over McCallum for 15 games where it looks like maybe you can be a playoff team isn't exactly a fireable offense, and Sessions only kind of got terrible after Cousins went out. So I'm not buying that.
And also, to be, you know, in Malone's defense, like, if you're going to sign, you know, if you're going to bring in, like, they could have brought in somebody worse than Ramon Sessions that could have been, like, just a clear, like, break-the-glass emergency point guard.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ronnie Price. Like, they could – like, they could have
– breaking the glass.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, his nose.
They're so bad.
Oh, my gosh. The blood on the floor at the Blazer game that night, like, there was legitimately a pool of blood that Thomas Robinson – oh, my gosh. Thomas Robinson absolutely – and just – oh, gosh. And Thomas Robinson is, like, the strongest dude.
Yeah, like, he really is.
It's just like
– he's just one big muscle.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Thomas Robinson's one big muscle, and he hit Ronnie Price, poor Ronnie Price, in the face. But, like, that's the type of guy that, like – should have been, like, the third point guard. If you just spent a ton of money on Darren Collison and you want to develop Ray McCallum, like, what was the point of the front office bringing in Ramon Sessions, who's 28? You know, it's, like, not like
He's only 28?
Yeah, I'm looking at it on Basketball Reference right now. He's 28, and it's, like, so you bring in a guy that's in the prime of his career, but you, like, so, you know, you can't really blame Malone at the same time because he's – you know, he's an NBA coach. He likes veterans. Yeah. And, like, you give him a guy who's 28 years old.
Either.
Yeah, they don't.
Like, Reggie Evans is our oldest player. Ryan Hollins is a veteran on this team. That's how bad it is.
Ryan Hollins is 30.
He logged, I think, as many turnovers and fouls as he did points and rebounds in a starting spot last night.
I'm going to look that right now. Let's check out Ryan Hollins' line from last night. He played 23 minutes. We'll give him an extra minute.
Okay.
We'll round up. 5 rebounds, 2 points, 4 fouls, 2 turnovers.
Oh, man. Okay. He almost had the same amount.
Yeah, but that's pretty – oh, man. So he had more fouls and turnovers than he did points.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that one of those 4 shots he missed was so bad it turned into – it could have been a turnover for all intents and purposes.
Oh, man. I mean, it's Ryan Hollins. I don't not believe you. Somehow the Clippers have gotten worse without Ryan Hollins. By getting rid of Ryan Hollins.
The ultimate glue guy. Ryan Hollins. Ugh.
Gosh. I remember one time I saw that he had a skills camp. And it's like, I mean, I know every NBA player has better skills than, you know, the average person, but of all people to have a camp for skills.
Yeah.
I feel like it shouldn't have been Ryan Hollins. I think this game's going to be interesting. I think the Blazers, obviously, they are struggling. The way Rudy Gay, I mean, the way Batum's playing, I think it's a very, very scary matchup against Rudy Gay. Like, I think that, like, Batum is broken right now. Like,
yeah.
It's really, honestly, not fun to watch.
What? Why? Like, because there were no big sort of tectonic shifts with how the team plays or personnel or anything. Do you think it's just – he played for France this summer, yeah?
Yeah, he played for France this summer. I mean, I don't know how much this is weighing on him, but he did get divorced over the summer as well. So, you know, you never know when something, you know, personal could be affecting him. I don't know if it is or not. You know, he's also had some, like, bad injury luck this year. Like, Larry Sanders in his – perhaps Larry Sanders' last game as a professional basketball player pushed Batum on, like, a dunk. And Batum was going up for the dunk, and he, like, hit his head on – the floor at the Moda Center, and it was bad. Like, it was a nasty fall. Like, it looked like he was down for the count. I don't know how he got up and took the free throws and stuff after, but like, he was out for a couple games after that. Like, his wrist is still bothering him from that, and he's been playing through it. But like, you know, he did play for France this summer, and this was the first time that he had to be the guy on that France team. Like, there was no Tony Parker. You know, there was no Noah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Boris Diaw was the guy. He was the other guy. But, like, Batum, like, down in, like, the later rounds of that tournament, like, you know, he was taking all the shots and...
Yeah, playing heavy minutes.
Playing heavy minutes, defending the best guy. Like, he was playing, like, however many minutes those games are. Like, he was sitting out, like, 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And, like, he came back, and I think he had, like... He had one evening off during training camp, like, because they normally have like two practices, and he had one evening off, so he didn't really have like an extended period of like just rest time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I heard on the local radio here that covers the Blazers that Antonio Harvey, the guy that does play-by-play, was floating the idea of maybe. Just having Batum rest for like a week or two.
Hey, I was going to float that idea just now.
Why not?
Like, yeah. Develop Crab a little more. So he's playoff ready as an eighth or ninth man.
And clearly, like, I think he also just needs a break mentally.
How's their upcoming schedule? Because if they have the Kings tonight, it must be fairly not bad.
I'm pulling it up right now. Let's see. I wish I had it off the top of my head, but there's so many games.
They got the Kings, Suns, Celtics, Wizards, Nets, Cavs, Hawks. Okay, so it's medium.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. That's a tough little schedule right there. So, I mean, those are – see, Boston's not a playoff team. Brooklyn's not really a playoff team. But
they're a team, really.
Yeah. I mean, Phoenix – is probably not going to make the playoffs, but they're a playoff team right now.
Yeah, they should be a playoff team.
Yeah. In Oklahoma City, they had a really nice win the other day, but with, Westbrook going for, like, 3-15.
Yeah.
But Phoenix isn't going to make it easy. Like,
no.
So, that's going to be an interesting game, and Phoenix traditionally, last year I think they took 3 of 4 from the Blazers, so... that should be interesting. And then Washington is tough.
Yeah. They beat you up inside, too. And with no Lopez, that'll show.
I feel like there's more good teams in the East this year. As much as we thought that the East was, like, worse this year.
Yeah.
I think it's actually better.
I would definitely agree, because the Hawks are, you know, whatever they are now, 12 in a row.
Amazing.
And on a good day, the Bulls are probably the best championship contender out East, but, you know, if the Cavs are the 5 seed, even as bad as they've been, that's a pretty good top of the conference there.
Yeah, and, gosh, Milwaukee would be so much fun if they had Jabari.
I know.
Like, they would be so much, like, they'd be really fun to see in a 4-5 series, just like Jabari in the playoffs. Oh, man. That would have been fun. But still, I like Milwaukee even. Like, Milwaukee reminds me, it seems, I think I've said this a couple times, they remind me with, like, how deep they are and how much, like, small ball they play. They seem, like, kind of, like, Phoenix-y. And, like, they're young and they're fun and, like, you know, Matt, they kind of give me, like, a Western Conference vibe.
I like that, how they sort of, they make use of these veterans really well while also developing just a ton of exciting guys at the same time.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like there haven't been that, like, I mean, maybe there have been in, like, you know, the past with, like, you know, maybe the older Hawks teams or something like that with, like, you know, young Horford and Josh Smith or, you know. But, like, they're so deep. Like, this team's, like, it's crazy how deep they are.
Yeah, it is weird. And Henson's really been improving. And with him and Giannis, they could have, like, the longest armed front court in the league.
I saw that during their trip to London, they had Giannis using a selfie stick. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, if anybody was meant to take selfies, it was Giannis.
That's superfluous. You don't need that.
No. It was overkill.
Yeah, his hand wingspan is probably longer than my arm.
His hands are ridiculous. But, yeah, I do think the East is better. I agree with you on Chicago that they're probably on the right day, like, for Gasol and everybody there involved.
Yeah, and I kind of like how Miami has recast themselves as a defensive stoppage team with enough firepower that they can hang with anyone.
I do like that they kind of just, like, slow the pace down and were like, okay, we're just going to try and hang in there and then see if Wade and Bosch can win the game.
Yeah, they killed the Kings with their defense there tonight. I think the Kings only put up 83 or something, and Cousins couldn't do a thing.
Hassan Whiteside is he's like Billy Ray Bates out there, you know, like,
yeah.
Linsanity, Whiteside sanity.
Another king that they couldn't develop.
Yeah. Why? I mean, I've read some things about his, like, that he didn't have, like, the best attitude or something. I don't know. That's really unfortunate for the Kings that they couldn't have, like, imagine how good Boogie would be if he had
a
rim
protector. It's a perfect pairing, yeah. I think you can pretty much write off, like, any players who came into the organization under the Malouf regime, just because there was at best negligence and at worst active sabotage to try to get the team out. So I don't know. I'm not going to blame Whiteside for that one.
Yeah. There was a lot of things going on with the Maloufs.
Yeah.
And I saw the other day, I think Hyken tweeted it out that is the NHL that is looking at the Maloofs as possible franchise owners.
Yeah, in Vegas, because we know how well that went with the NBA.
Oh my gosh. Like, how do sports leagues continue, like, how does a sports league want to do business with these people?
And the NHL, I think, has been doing a pretty good job lately of, like, getting out of areas where there's no hockey and going to Canada, and that's worked out for them. And going back to Vegas would seem like a really bad idea. Especially with them.
Yeah, just, like, that's the thing for me is that, like, how can you trust them to, like, really put forth an effort in, like, I just don't, like, they didn't care about the Kings at all, you know, like.
Yeah.
I just think that's a bad look. Not that I follow the NHL enough to really have, you know, an opinion about their business practices, but, looking at the Western Conference, we were just talking about Oklahoma City. They're 19-20. Phoenix is 24-18.
Oof.
This is going to be really hard.
Yeah, they have to go something like they have to win 70% of their games going down the stretch, as I recall. Somewhere in that area.
That is – I do like the Waiters. I like Oklahoma City Waiters.
Yeah, he kind of makes sense as a backup dude. Is he starting, actually?
I know he's been getting – I know the new scuttlebutt is – the new drama is that he's been getting more – a lot more PT than Reggie Jackson and has basically been getting Reggie Jackson's minutes.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. So that's – yeah, that's the other thing. It's like
– I think it's a conspiracy to drive down Jackson's efficiency so they can maybe come to the negotiating table a couple million under.
Yeah, it could very well could be. They could it could be the Eric Bledsoe of next year, where it's just like going to be the super long drawn out. But yeah. The thing is, someone's going to give him huge money. Like,
yeah, or you forget he exists until like October when he finally signs with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the poor Waiters, man. Drama just follows him wherever he goes because Cleveland, you know, it was such a drama fest. And I remember when he left, he said something to the effect of, "Great, now I can finally play with an elite player." Which is total shots fired. And, of course, now he goes into Oklahoma City with maybe the most confusing chemistry situation in the league. Like, I think everyone kind of thinks Westbrook and Durant are friends enough, but every so often, like, something seems off about them, especially with how neither one has really had that many good games at the same time as the other one this year. You know what I mean?
It really does seem – I mean, it just seems like Westbrook and Durant are just, like – I'm sure they like get along, but like it just seems like they're two very different people.
Yeah.
Like different types of people. Like Durant like will like, you know, like not to judge someone's character by how they deal with the media, but like, you know, Westbrook is like, you know, very different in front of the media, and he Durant is like always, you know, very open to answering questions, and like, you know, he'll stay there, and like, you know, it just seems like, you know, Durant is always trying really hard to be the team guy, and I'm not saying Westbrook needs to try that hard to be the team guy because he's so amazing,
mm-hmm.
and like he plays and gets people involved and does all these crazy things, but like it just seems like they go about their business differently. I just don't know. That's what it seems like to me. But I'm looking at the box score from the Warriors game on Friday. Waiters played 37 minutes and Reggie Jackson played 18.
Wow.
So there's our answer. Waiters' line just 21, 3 steals, 2 assists, 1 block, 4 rebounds, 2 turnovers. But they also – I don't think Oklahoma City had Bogut, so – we'll just not really count that.
Yeah, I covered the Cavaliers last year, and what I never got a sense of – I couldn't ever decide whether or not Waiters was a good player or not. Like, he looks like a good player where he'll occasionally make drives and hit some nice shots, but I'm not sold on him as a thing.
Yeah, I definitely last year, I think, was the first time I truly saw flashes of, like, good Dion Waiters. Like, when he played Portland, like, I think one of the games that he played Portland, like, Kyrie didn't play or something like that. And, like, he just was just going, like, he gets, like, really downhill, like, you know, on pick and rolls. Like, he's really good at getting, like, attacking the basket. Like, quickly. Like, he will get to his spot. Like, he'll get to that little Euro step in the lane, and, like, he'll get to his layup, you know. And, like, when you have a guy that can just zip to the basket like that, like, that's a huge, valuable skill. But it's the other stuff, like, obviously, like, the attitude stuff. And I don't know either if he's, like, necessarily a good catch-and-shoot guy, which is, like, you need to have, I feel like.
Not particularly.
Yeah.
And I think he makes sense most in the Thunder if he could improve that. But the rap on Dion Waiters has always been that he just calls for the ball constantly. It never passes. And of all the teams to do that on, playing next to two guys who already have that problem is not necessarily a great fit for my money.
It just feels like they never found – like, could you imagine if the Thunder had, like, Wes Matthews?
Oh, my God. Lord, that would be amazing.
That they'd win the championship. Like
he's perfect for that team.
No, yeah, like it wouldn't even be close. Like
he and Westbrook would fire each other up to the nth degree, and it would just be over once they get going.
Like the court would explode if Wesley Matthews and Westbrook were on the same team, and like that, yeah, it would just be like you just need a guy that is like. Or like a J.J. Redick, like just someone that is just money from three at the two that plays hard defense, and like that's all you would need. But and they've still – I feel like they've never figured out that part of the formula. Like they always have a really good defender at the two that can't shoot.
Yeah, Roberson is basically Sefolosha but worse.
Yeah. And the, Thabo is flourishing in Atlanta.
It's killing it, yeah.
Not that he's like a major part of their offense or anything, but he's a big part of their defense.
He just fits so well.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love Atlanta.
I'm kind of a hater of Atlanta. I don't think they're for real.
You think they're just racking up wins right now against people?
I don't know.
There could be a little bit of a Pacers early season last year where they're just trying really hard and everybody else is and they're healthy and everybody else is like kind of just going through the season. You know?
Yeah, like they're playing such like precise hyperkinetic basketball, but I think maybe when they get into the playoffs against someone who can match up with them better, like maybe the Bulls, who can harass them a little bit inside.
I think even the Wizards, like
yeah, the Wizards would be a terrible matchup.
I mean,
anyone who can rotate and chase the shooters around the perimeter for three passes worth of offense, I think that really slows them down. And if you get a good tactician like Thibodeau or a good perimeter defensive team like Washington, I think they maybe run into problems when – because I think if you shut off Teague, then maybe that's the supply line to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how good their plan B is.
Yeah. That's the thing is that, like, you know, you look at teams, if they're cutting off Teague – like, yes, Korver is still, you know, a great shooter, but then you really have to count on, I think, Horford or Millsap at that point to kind of, like, win their matchups. Because in the playoffs, like, that really matters a lot. And, you know, like, one of the things that when teams take the ball out of Lillard's hands that keeps the Blazers in games is they can throw the ball to LaMarcus and he can score.
Yeah.
And I know that Millsap, and maybe this is just me underrating Millsap, but I don't know if necessarily he's going to be able to win those matchups in the playoffs against Powell, against against Nene.
Yeah, and the thing about the Hawks is that one of their really great assets this year is their depth. You know, they can go 10 plus deep, and all those guys can shoot. But the other thing about the playoffs is that rotations tighten inherently. You know, teams don't go 10, 12 deep.
No, and I that you know last year that was a strength for the Spurs was that they could go 10 deep, and it'd be interesting to see if Budenholzer has the fortitude to like keep his guys fresh because
yeah,
like
will
that,
Mike Spott still get 15 minutes in April?
Right, exactly. Will he still get 15 minutes in the playoffs in a series where you know in a situation where they've never been and. That's the Hawks will be interesting come playoff time to see if they actually are for real.
The team they remind me of is the Nuggets from I think 2 or 3 years ago where they were the 3 seed and the Curry led Warriors upset them as a 6 seed where they you know they played a really fun style. They killed everyone in their regular season because they could go deep and they could just run teams out of the building. And then come playoff time, a couple of things don't bounce right. And, you know, they catch a hot team. And
well, and another thing is they really thrive off turnovers.
Yeah.
And like, they thrive off turnovers, but I feel like, obviously, turnovers go down in the playoffs significantly. And, teams are way more careful. Like, they'll be able to scout. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see whether they, you know, that's going to carry over. And I don't know if... You know, being so depending on turnovers, like that's huge for them. I feel like
Budenholzer is a great coach. So if anyone can make the right adjustments at the top half of the East, I would definitely trust him over. I guess probably any of the other coaches of the 6 teams that we know are going to make it right now.
Yeah, I
do. Assuming the Bucks stay where they are.
I do think that he's definitely one of the better coaches. I mean, he's at this point he has to be the front runner for Coach of the Year.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Because I mean, yes, the Warriors have been amazing, but like Steve Kerr is like he's a great coach. I mean, obviously he's a great coach, but like it also didn't necessarily really take like a rocket scientist to be like, hey, let's put Clay in motion. Let's not post him up every single play.
So much of what the Hawks do is you can really see Budenholzer's fingerprints on it, like how he uses their personnel and like gets everyone in the right space and you know runs this genius offense.
They game planned Portland like I mean when they were here I mean they whooped Portland pretty good, but like they were clearly like game planning. It was like they game planned it like almost like a playoff game. Like they were doing like the Spurs did in the playoffs, where like they would find mismatches with like Millsap in the post, and then like they'd have a bunch of guys cutting off of it, and then Millsap would just like find guys for layups, and like.
And that's a team they're only going to play twice this year. That's amazing.
Yeah, they play next week, so that should be that's going to be a fun game to watch. But yeah, no, I just think that when those teams like. It seemed like Toronto also, like, when they get a chance to play these – I feel like when the good East teams play the West teams, like, I feel like they want to prove themselves a little bit. Yeah,
conference pride and all that.
Yeah, and also, you know, but, yeah, that Atlanta game, I mean, they're so good. But, yeah, I there is a little bit of a sense that, like, I think there is a you got to be cautious with peaking too early, at least – for me, and I think they, you know, there's also the competition there, but
yeah,
I still think Chicago though is on the right day.
Yeah, Noah's got to get healthy. He has not looked good lately.
And from what I hear, Rose hasn't looked very good.
Rose is shooting 25% on threes and taking the most of his career by far, I think.
Yeah, I think I read that. I think it was Kevin Pelton that just did a piece about D. Rose.
Yeah, some days he has it, and more days Noah has it, and they're a good deep team. But I think if they get everyone healthy, they're definitely championship caliber. But if Noah and Rose are like this, then you know who knows who's going to make it out of the East.
Can Detroit win a series? Detroit Atlanta.
I would love that matchup.
I would love Detroit Atlanta
playoff Brandon Jennings.
Oh my gosh, that. Is the series that I want. I want Detroit-Atlanta. I want Stan Van against the Hawks again.
Oh, man. Andre Drummond in the playoffs. Jonas Jerebko having meaningful minutes. This is great. Sign me up.
Please, yeah. Brooklyn just needs to fully, you know, pack their season up and then let Detroit flourish in the playoffs.
I'm glad that the East playoffs will at least be watchable this year because I remember last year half the – playoff games they weren't even worth checking in on because it was such a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, the playoffs last year was just – I mean, the first round was so good in the West. And then, like, you know, the Blazers got whooped on. The Washington and Indiana series was, like, the ugliest series I've ever seen.
It set basketball back 20 years.
It was like the 2000s, like, Knicks Heat.
Yeah, like a wrestling match.
Yeah, it was just Indiana just made those games so ugly.
Yeah.
You know, today if the playoffs started today, it'd be Toronto Cleveland in the first round.
Oh, that would be great.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine how torn Drake would be?
Oh well, I think he's gonna have to do the thing you see in Super Bowls and stuff where people have like a split jersey. And he'll be wearing a blazer or a hoodie or something, and he'll show, like, whichever half is winning at any given point so he can claim credibility both ways.
Exactly. It's like when – I think it was I think it was, like, A.J. Hawk's girlfriend – A.J. Hawk's sister was dating Brady Quinn or something like that in, like, a Fiesta Bowl a long time ago. It's that type of situation.
Yeah. The whole rap about the playoffs, especially in the West this year, is we know who's going to make it. I mean – depending on how the Oklahoma City Phoenix thing works out. And everyone says it's all about matchups. So for Portland, who should they want and then who do they not want?
Man, it's so tough because The thing is like last year at this time I was like, they definitely don't want to face Houston. And then like in April, like all these teams, like Houston started looking bad towards the end of the season. I'm like, you know what? Maybe they do want to play Houston.
And, yeah,
like,
they could be worse teams to face.
Like it's so weird how much it all changes. But right now I say the team that they'd want to face the most in the first round would be the Mavericks. I don't really believe in the Mavericks that much, although Carlisle is a wizard, and I don't know if you necessarily want to go against him if you're the Blazers in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I guess I would say Dallas to me, though, they seem like the team that has, like, they always have a really bad game in them.
Yeah, they do.
Like, more than any other team in the West, they always have a bad game in them. Like, within a span of, like, four games, they have one where they just absolutely poop. And it's just like, for me, that's the team that, if I were the Blazers, I would want to face. I think LaMarcus over Dirk at this stage in their careers, I think LaMarcus has an advantage. Just, like, absolutely. Athletically, and, like, they'd have to put Chandler on him, or they'd have to put Dirk on Lopez, and I think that, like, I don't know if that's necessarily a good matchup for, for the Mavericks. But obviously Rondo and Monte and Chandler, I mean, Parsons right now, I guess, is better than Batum. So that's another problem for me is that,
he,
like,
certainly can do more than Batum too. He can,
right,
create a little more.
And I the one problem, I guess, at this stage of the conversation is that if it were a playoff series, then Batum's issues become even more magnified. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they can win with a player that's playing as poorly as he is right now. So
I think given 41 more games of regular season basketball, Batum will equilibrate himself somewhat.
I believe he will too, but we still haven't seen it, and that's the concerning thing. Is that?
But,
like,
that's the whole thing about the Western Conference, is the Clippers and the Spurs, who before the season everyone thought were surefire contenders, are both struggling a lot. Oklahoma City is struggling a lot. I mean, who knows what the seedings will even be. So it's the Western Conference is just crazy this year.
It's the craziest conference or division. I mean, it's like the SEC West. Like, it's just like it's just – every team's beating up on each other, but, like, yeah, it's all going to be about matchups. There's nothing like it, really.
There are also no gimmies except for maybe the Wolves, depending on how you feel. Like, the Jazz are kind of squirrely. The Lakers are waking up a little bit. The Kings are whatever they are.
And I would even say, Utah's kind of crazy, like you said, and it's just, you know. And even the Lakers sometimes can –
they play teams tough.
Up. Yeah. They can kind of get up for you. Like, if Swaggy gets hot, they're in the game. And yeah. Or, you know, even Jordan Hill can go off some nights. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the West is crazy. There's really no gimmies. Like, Anthony Davis, the Pelicans are not going to make the playoffs, and he's the best player in the league.
Not in DeMarcus Cousins' division, of course.
Okay. All right.
I'm just kidding.
Are you riding that train?
Oh, the which one?
Is DeMarcus Cousins the? I mean, he has arguably just as much talent as anybody in the league.
I mean, he's my favorite player.
Fair.
I've watched pretty much every game of his career, and I find him singularly fascinating. And for all of his talent, it still seems, even right now when he's capitalizing on it more than he ever has, it still seems like there are some rough edges to round off. Like, he's not a complete player the way a lot of people are pitching him this year.
Right.
Like, and he's maybe the Kings' best passer as a center, and, like, watching him rebound is fun. Like, watching no other player rebound is fun. Like, he grabbed a one-handed game-winning rebound against the Jazz like 3 years ago when they were good, and it's incredible.
You wrote a thing about Damian Lillard.
Oh yeah.
Did
it seem too hyperbolic?
No. No. I have very much. He very much does have an eat your soul quality to his game. Do you obviously you enjoy watching Damian Lillard?
I love watching him play. He's Oakland as hell. He's one of my favorite players to watch, and you know, I think everyone's brought this up by now, but the most exciting time in the NBA is when the Blazers are down 6 with 3 minutes left. And he just gets that look in his eye.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he, for every big three that gets all the headlines, like, he can also, he's just so good in the fourth quarter. I mean, you know this better than I.
Yeah, he's spectacular. No, I mean, it was a very cool thing. And it's like, there are times when he, like, really does look like he's possessed.
Yeah.
You know, like, and back when he was,
he's
like
just kind of facially vacant and just destroying dudes and not registering, like, anything.
Yeah, and it's very, I mean, I made this joke, like, during his first summer league, like, that it's like the Omen. Like, I know it's spelled differently, but it's Damien from the Omen. Like, he has, like, he's just, like, this little, like, you know, this guy that, like, no, you know, he's possessed by, like, and he just, like, sometimes when he, like, jumps, like, it doesn't make sense that he should be able to jump as high as he can and as, like, ferociously as he does, like, when he dunks on people.
Yeah, I've been, this idea sort of struck me a while ago, and I can't really get out of my head. That he is just made of some super dense material that's, like, not human matter that just really, like, allows him to elevate himself to another plane or something. It's not sensible, but watching him, the Blazers are so organized and efficient, and they do everything really, you know, like, mechanically almost. You know what I mean? But then Lillard comes alive, and he just destroys dudes. It's amazing.
Yeah, he, like, just breaks off from the system and just, like, it's just like, oh my gosh! No, it's really awesome to see, and he really does have like that, like, he's possessed quality. So no, I really enjoyed that piece.
Thank you.
He's so much fun to watch, and the way he takes over games, it's like he's got like another power that like we can't see.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean. And you'd think, given the style he plays and how bombastic he is, that he would be more overrated. But no one seems to think of him as, you know, for whatever it means, a top five point guard or an elite point guard. And he's probably not going to get All-Star snubbed, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's a chance he might not. I don't think there should be. I think he is clearly an All-Star.
He's been better than Chris Paul this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's been – I would say he's been the third best guard in the West behind Harden and Curry this year. Like, I think it goes Harden, Curry, or Curry, Harden, whatever. I mean, Curry's obviously number one, but, like, I think as far as guards, I think he's been at least the third best in the West.
I think you're right, just thinking about who the top teams are and who their top guards are, and yeah, I would say so, which is wild.
Yeah, no, it's crazy that he's – already that good, and it's his third year. And I remember, you know, because he was a 4-year senior, which is like, oh my gosh, how could a guy get better? You know, he's already quote unquote old, and like that was funny to me. But obviously, he's proven that's, you know, not really a valid argument. But
well, running the numbers for that piece, what struck me was that. What leaps off the page is that his defense has made a huge jump.
Oh, absolutely. It's
like his defensive rating in the past couple of years has been, you know, it's improved so much this year. And I wonder how much of that is like familiarity with Stotts' system or how much of it is just him learning and redoubling himself and just getting better.
I think it's a lot of different things. And I think one of the things too is he's not by any means like a – you're not going to be like, all right, well, we got to put Dame on him. You know, like
– yeah, like he can get confused sometimes.
But like he's still a great – I mean, he's not great, but he's
– he's tenacious.
He works his butt off on defense now. Like he – like maybe he didn't have the conditioning before to play a full game on offense like he does and play a full game on defense. But like now he's got that a little bit now and he – is guarding and fighting through screens a lot better. His technique is better on that. Like, someone would set a screen on him in his first 2 years, and he would just die.
Like, yeah, he was done. Like, that's the thing that young guards always struggle with.
He was just not very good at, like, positioning his body to get around the screens. And now he's really got that. And he just fights. And I think also one of the things, his basically his like main coach, and like I actually asked him about this for something that I did, and he worked a lot with Tom Thibodeau in the USA basketball camp. Yeah. And like he said that like him and Thibodeau, like of all the coaches for Team USA, he said that Tom Thibodeau and him were like the closest. Like they they vibed together the most.
The people historically who connect with Thibodeau are Rose and people like that who just work their asses off and eat, sleep, and breathe basketball. So like Lillard seeing that is probably – that's a good sign for his mentality that like he just really, really cares.
Yeah, and so he like – and – you know, he was on Team USA, so obviously, you know, he's playing behind D. Rose and Steph Curry and James Harden and Kyrie, like, because all those guys have been in that USA system longer than he has. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he's there, and basically he has to commit himself to defense in this camp. And yeah. While he has control. And while he has to commit himself to defense, it's Tom Thibodeau coaching him. So I'm sure that that had something to do with – had something to do with him getting better on the defensive end was, you know, having Tibbs in his ear for like an entire month or two. So
there's something to be said about that, where a lot of people have talked about the Team USA bump that Cousins, Gay, and Klay Thompson have had, but no one's really talked about Lillard within that superstructure. So that's interesting.
Well, he didn't make the team was the thing, but like,
right, yeah.
But I think that camp, and I think not making the team, like, because Damian has been, like, his entire career, like, he went to Weber State. He went to three different high schools in Oakland. Yeah. Like,
he'll find anything to, like, piss him off and get fired up for
him. Exactly. He loves that. So, like, you know, I'm sure he would have loved to, like, go to Spain and, you know, try and do what Kyrie did and win, you know, tournament MVP. I'm sure he could have done that. But, like, I'm sure for Damian, the person, it was just – it was more fitting of his lifetime narrative – that he didn't make the team. So it just reaffirmed everything about him. So
it wouldn't make sense if he made the team yet.
Right, exactly. And so I think that helped him. And, yeah, he really likes to latch on to anything. And pretty much the Blazers in general like to latch on to anything that makes them feel like nobody thinks that they're good enough. So
Portland inferiority complex, man. They're perfect for the city.
Exactly. It is the perfect Portland inferiority complex. Wesley Matthews has it. LaMarcus has it. So yeah, that's the team's MO. So, anything else you want to say, looking forward to this matchup, and you know, rest of the, you know, the year, I guess.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to watching it. I'm looking forward to Alan Crabb ascending to all-star status in 2 years or so. That's about it. Well, I guess I should say now, since it's towards the end of the podcast, that I find the Blazers very fun to watch. They're one of my favorite teams just because they're so cohesive. So I really like what you guys are doing up there.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Patrick. It was fun.